One of the great mysteries within science today lies in the murky very beginnings of life on Earth. How did it come to be? And once the first life, simple as it was, appeared, what did it look like? And what stages did it go through to get to cellular life as we know it? One possibility is known as the RNA world hypothesis, where self-replicating RNA molecules spread in whatever environment abiogenesis occurred in before the evolution of DNA and proteins. This shrouded and mysterious hypothesis, as of yesterday, took a giant leap closer to being the reality of the first stages of the genesis of life on Earth, the very uttermost first stage of how it came to be that we are here. Like DNA, RNA can store genetic information. RNA is more fragile than DNA, but it's thought that ancient RNA may have evolved the ability to strengthen itself by methylating other RNA molecules as a kind of protective coat. Enzymes made of RNA, ribozymes, can actually start and aid chemical reactions that life uses. So ribozymes might actually precede protein enzymes. Indeed, the ribosomes of cells as we know them are based on RNA. It seems conspicuous that all of this would be coincidental to the genesis of DNA-based life. And indeed, some of the viruses run on RNA. That's their genome. While there have been alternate hypotheses, the RNA world hypothesis has only strengthened the more we've learned, and now we have a major leap forward. Yesterday, NASA announced a rather striking new group of findings regarding samples of the asteroid Bennu returned by the OSIRIS-REx spacecraft in the form of three new papers. The first paper, links to all papers in the description below, is by Nguyen and colleagues at Johnson Space Center. And what they were doing was analyzing pre-solar grains in the samples. This is interesting material and has been found in primitive meteorites like carbonaceous chondrites, but never in pristine form like the samples, and represent the dust from the stars that predated the current solar system. Basically supernova dust. They found the material in two different types of rock in the samples, which yields clues about the parent body of Bennu. And they found that the samples contain 6 times more pre-solar dust than any other astromaterial we have ever studied. This means that Bennu formed in an area of the protoplanetary disk that was particularly enriched in pre-solar dust. This is the opposite of what was expected. It was previously thought that the solar system was well mixed in this regard. Clearly, it was not. Bennu really is a fragment of a larger asteroid that got blasted in an impact. The researchers also found that Bennu's parent body had alterations by fluids, think liquid water and ammonia, but unevenly, as there are pockets within the samples that are not as altered, which is a bit of a mystery. The second paper by Yoshihiro Furukawa at Tohoku University in Japan and colleagues runs straight into the RNA world hypothesis. Basically, what happens is that when the samples returned to Earth in 2023, there was 121 grams of material collected. NASA then sent tiny samples out globally to specialists in detecting biological compounds that could analyze them. The first findings were water, carbon, and some related organic compounds. Then it got interesting in that other analyses found amino acids, formaldehyde, and all 5 of the nucleobases found in RNA and DNA. And they found phosphates in the samples. This is getting really close to having all the components of RNA, but there was a major one missing. Sugar. In this case, ribose, whereas DNA is deoxyribose. This completes it. Bennu has all of the chemical building blocks of RNA. This is not actually a new finding. Ribose was found in 2 meteorite samples previously, though the problem with meteorites is that we rarely get to them just after they fell to collect them up and get them in a sealed environment. Rather, they almost always get rained on or altered by exposure to the atmosphere, whereas the Bennu samples are pristine. So you can have high confidence that it isn't a false detection. Meteorites less so, unless it happens to hit the roof of the meteorite lab at Arizona State University and gets collected immediately. Which, regrettably, has never happened, other than micrometeorites, which are everywhere. But here's the kicker. They did not find deoxyribose. Bennu has the parts for RNA, but not DNA. If Bennu is representative of the early material of the solar system, then that means that ribose is abundant in the solar system. Deoxyribose, maybe not, for unknown reasons. This would lend support to the RNA world hypothesis and essentially dictate that the RNA world is the only way it could have happened. What Furukawa and colleagues did was crush the tiny sampling they had of the material, mixed it with water and acid, and then took a look with a chromatography mass spectrometer to identify the compounds present in the rock. In addition to ribose, they found an array of other sugars, lysose, arabinose, xylose, galactose, and our familiar and indeed important for most life on Earth, glucose. I know what you're thinking, but JMG, what about fructose for the love of corn? They did not find that, but biology and chemistry people, tell me in the comments below if you think there is a non-biological process outside the lab that could produce fructose in nature, in principle. Anyway, in principle, this finding also shows that the building blocks of RNA could have been seeded everywhere in the solar system, including Venus and Mars, during the times they were habitable. The team believes that the sugars formed in brines in the parent body that contained formaldehyde. Interestingly, this team also discovered salts in Bennu, again, something life uses. Interestingly, evidence for these brines, at least in frozen form, has also been found at Enceladus and Ceres. The building blocks of life and complex chemistry seem to be everywhere in this star system. The third finding is the most puzzling, however. Another team led by Zach Gainsforth at the University of California, Berkeley, and Scott Sanford at NASA Ames, found a peculiar gum-like substance in the samples that has not been seen in any other extraterrestrial rock. This material, whatever it is, probably formed in the Bennu parent body when it was warmed through natural radioactive decay enough for liquid water to exist. The material is now hardened, but its properties are such that it was once flexible and soft, and made up of polymer-like materials, heavy in nitrogen and oxygen. This is a complex molecule, whatever it is, and it may indeed have something to do with triggering life on Earth, but it's unclear just how. What seems to have happened is a compound called carbamate formed through a chemical process involving ammonia, which has a lower freezing point than water, and carbon dioxide. Carbamate in turn is soluble in water, but if it survives long enough, it can polymerize as it reacts with itself and other molecules, until the resulting complex molecule is no longer soluble in water. This would suggest that the material formed before the parent body had liquid water, or the reaction wouldn't have gotten this far to produce the gum. It's possible that this is actually one of the earliest alterations of material in the parent body, not long after its formation, meaning this material dates from very, very early in the history of the solar system. How they found this stuff and studied it is rather fascinating. The team used an infrared microscope to look for carbon-rich grains that contained nitrogen and oxygen. Then it gets crazy. They reinforced the particle with a thin layer of platinum, welded a tungsten needle onto it, mind you, this is all microscopic, lifted the particle from the matrix, and then hit it with a beam of charged particles to shave it down further. When they got it to about a thousandth of the width of a human hair, they looked at it with an electron microscope and did their chemical analysis. They immediately saw the gum material and knew it wasn't something they'd ever seen before. And that started the process of trying to understand what exactly this was and how it came to be. It soon became clear that after whatever made it, while in flexible form, it deposited on ice and minerals in the parent body. Weirdly, when they applied pressure, its gum-like nature became apparent. The material is translucent, and when exposed to radiation, it gets brittle, like plastic does when exposed to sunlight for too long. Interestingly, the chemical groups involved in this material are actually very similar to polyurethane, so you could term this stuff as a kind of natural plastic. But a primitive one. Polyurethane is a complex and ordered polymer, and probably makes for a nicer finish on a coffee table than Bennu gum would. I can't say that with 100% certainty, however. It could be stunningly gorgeous applied over nice walnut, but I suspect not. The gum is much less orderly and haphazard, as might be expected with something natural rather than synthetic. But it does illustrate the surprising variety and nature of organic materials in asteroids. But the real takeaway here is the bolstering of the RNA world hypothesis. The very first life on Earth could indeed have been RNA-based, and there actually is room for a precursor form of life before RNA, according to one hypothesis. This new evidence does not falsify those alternative hypotheses, but it does strongly bolster the RNA world. But at the same time, since deoxyribose was not detected, you can't have DNA without it, it's the D in DNA, what happened afterwards, and how did DNA come about? This finding also deepens that mystery since we haven't a clue where the deoxyribose came from, if not asteroids. The period after the RNA world is sometimes referred to as the RNP world, where ribonucleoproteins developed, which then allowed for the era of DNA and more complex proteins. And being more stable and durable than RNA, this would explain how DNA as information carrier molecules became dominant. At that point, protein enzymes took over from ribozymes as biocatalysts. Somehow, perhaps due to them being more versatile until we get to DNA-based life as we know it. Yet it must be emphasized, there are still a lot of unknowns and uncertainties with that scenario, but here we have taken one large leap towards understanding the origins of life. And yet again, it's appearing simpler than we might have thought. So once you have the building blocks delivered to Earth, recent work by Stephen Benner showed that if you percolate those building blocks in water through volcanic glasses, such as those found in a volcanic hot spring, the result is RNA molecules coming out. They are random, not carrying information, but get enough of them, eventually something organized enough to make primitive life might pop out of the randomness. RNA generation turned out far easier than had been envisioned, to the point that looking for ways RNA could be made based on the assumption it must have been complex led us to missing the simple path for decades when it was right there the whole time. Indeed, I would not be surprised if we find RNA on Mars, or even the asteroids. But there was also recent work by Deamer and Damer that showed that protocells, a kind of soap bubble, but also the precursor to cell membranes, form in volcanic hot springs that go through repeated drying out cycles. Again, this was much simpler of a process than expected. This keeps happening with abiogenesis research, and it makes the great silence more pressing. If abiogenesis is easy and not the great filter, then the universe must teem with microbial life. So what is the filter? I reiterate Enrico Fermi's point. Where are they? Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently wondering what the dinosaurs would think of all of this. Life started with asteroids, but it can also end in the blink of an eye by forming a huge crater filled with the building blocks of life. I suspect we would get a hearty guffaw from a sauropod over this, and worse, I now feel like the carbonaceous chondrite meteorite with all its building blocks of life sitting on the shelf in the studio is watching me. Very disturbing, but it would look good with googly eyes like a pet rock. And be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.